At least 8 Palestinians are killed in latest Israeli attacks in Gaza, where the total death toll has now exceeded 34,350. University protests against the Gaza genocide expand worldwide, from the U.S. to Europe to Australia. And 2 Palestinians are killed in the occupied West Bank after Israeli forces raid a checkpoint near the city of Jenin. More than 200 days into the Gaza genocide, and more Palestinians continue losing their lives to Israeli air and artillery strikes. Fresh bombardments on the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza has left at least 8 people dead. The southern cities of Khan Yunis and Rafah also witnessed new aerial raids. Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza has killed over 34,350 Palestinians since October the 7th. Most of those killed have been women and children. Total death toll is now in addition to more than 77,000 people who've been injured. Meanwhile, unrelenting Israeli attacks have reduced much of the territory to rubble. A UN official says that it will take years to clear the debris caused by over 200 days of bombardment and shelling.
What we know is that we estimate 37 million tons of debris, which is approximately 300 kilos of debris per square meter. 65% of the buildings that have been destroyed are residential buildings. An estimation has been done based on the current number of tons of debris in Gaza. And with 100 trucks, we're talking about 14 years of work with 100 trucks. So that's based on that figure. 14 years to remove with approximately 750,000 workdays, person workdays, to remove the debris.
Lord Hammer also said that much of Gaza debris is laced with unexploded ordnances. He added that about 10% of weapons failed to detonate when they were fired on Gaza and have to be removed by demining teams. Apart from residential buildings, critical infrastructure such as hospitals have been the prime targets of Israel's attacks. Joining us now from Deir al-Balah in central Gaza is our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Musabe. Hello Moti, hope you're safe and good morning to you. What can you tell us?
Yes, actually, the Israeli occupation forces are still decimating Gaza Strip with relentless airstrikes that have never stopped for a while. Over the last night, the Israeli warplanes carried out several airstrikes against the central area of Gaza Strip, basically a Nusayrat refugee camp, and a panic massacre was committed after the Israeli warplanes destroyed a residential building and inside a Nusayrat refugee camp. At least 6 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed over that attack, while dozens were injured. Needless to mention, the continuous artillery shelling that was maintained against the northern part of Nusayrat refugee camp and the eastern part of Al-Burij refugee camp as well. So we are talking about continuous Israeli strikes that are still hitting the central area of Gaza Strip, inflicting more destruction and devastation in the infrastructure and the residential buildings there. Moving to Rafah City, the Israeli occupation forces also committed another telling massacre after the Israeli warplanes destroyed a residential building in Yabna neighborhood. It is located in the eastern part, in the western part of Rafah City. At least 8 Palestinian civilians, including 4 children, were tragically unalived and killed by that attack. The Israeli occupation forces also renewed their attacks against the eastern part of Khan Yunis City. More Israeli airstrikes hit the residential buildings in the eastern part of Khan Yunis City. So the Israeli airstrikes and the Israeli attacks are still persistent, unabated, against all areas of Gaza Strip amid the catastrophic humanitarian conditions that are still befalling the Palestinian civilians who are still scattered in the...
And it seems like we may have just lost our dear Gaza correspondent there, but thank you. If you could hear us, Moti Abu Musabe, they're joining us from central Gaza. Meanwhile, anti-Israel protests are gaining momentum across U.S. campuses as more and more university students are standing in solidarity with Palestinians. Students camped out for a second day at George Washington University campus despite threats that they could face temporary suspension. The students at Arizona State University also joined the wave of U.S. campus protests, the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza. In the state of Illinois, hundreds of protesters marched on the University of Chicago campus. They echoed pro-Palestinian chants that have been reverberating through multiple American universities in the past days. Encampments in support of Palestine also continued at New York's Columbia University. The Education Center has been at the epicenter of the anti-Israel protests since the 18th of April. In over a week, hundreds of protesters have also been arrested at U.S. colleges. Protesting students are demanding university authorities divest from companies involved in the Israeli military. Some of the students have explained reasons behind the growing anger on university campuses. Let's take a listen.
Dozens of universities across the United States who are rising up in solidarity with Gaza and to put an end to the Zionist U.S. genocide against our people. As we remain under the bombs of occupation, resisting genocide and grieving for our martyred colleagues and faculty, and witnessing the destruction of our universities. Your global student solidarity is breaking boundaries, and it is time to smash the U.S. imperialist war machine. From Gaza to Columbia to Ann Arbor and Berkeley.
If you are not focusing on the brutal genocide currently happening in Gaza and the apartheid system Palestinians are living under in all of occupied Palestine, we implore you to do so. It is important to remember why we are here. Our encampment here at Columbia and encampments everywhere around the country are part of a larger movement for Palestinian liberation.
We've been in negotiations with the university since Friday, but increasingly we are met with an unwillingness to understand what are the core demands of the student movement. As we've said time and again, at the heart of this action, at the heart of this encampment, is the wish for a complete divestment and boycott of institutions that are complicit in Israel's genocide. Despite this, the university has proposed only further engagement with the apartheid state.
Right now we're here for Gaza because they say they're trying to wipe out Hamas when they're not. And they've shown it over and over again. They're not being precise, let's say, with their attacks. They've shown that they can be precise with something called a surgical strike, but they just haven't. And you know, bombing hospitals, universities, schools, ambulances, food trucks doesn't really show that you're trying to wipe out a resistance.
The students and other protesters are planning on staying here until all of the demands have been met, which include divesting from anything that has to do with the genocide, and also divulging what, opening the books, saying what is the funding for the school you go to.
We are doing this until we get our demands. We are doing this until the university, UCLA, divests, disclose, ends their silence, academic divestment, and does not continue to, or doesn't use police force for our peaceful protests. Those are our five demands. We will accomplish divestment. We are going to stay here until that. Without divestment, the siege will not end.
And protests and public demonstrations against the Israeli genocidal war in Gaza are no longer limited to specific regions, but continue spreading throughout the world with the participation of the student community. In Australia, students from the universities of Sydney and Melbourne set up camps and protested Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. Over 100 students reportedly held a sit-in at University of Melbourne alone, and they chanted anti-Israel slogans, held up signs, and in Europe, students in France, Germany, and some other countries also held similar protests despite restrictions. At Sciences Po University in Paris, students blocked an entrance to the campus while holding Palestinian flags as well as chanting slogans. In Berlin, demonstrators clashed with police in front of Parliament. Several people were arrested as police violently cleared their encampments. The protesters are calling on authorities to end providing funds and arms to the Israeli regime. Israeli forces have murdered two more Palestinians during a fresh raid near the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. Mustafa Abed and Ahmad Shawana were shot dead by occupation forces in the vicinity of the Salem checkpoint. Reports said the Israeli regime is refusing to hand their bodies over to the families. Israeli troops also raided other towns and villages across the occupied West Bank, including Kafr Ain, northwest of Ramallah, Nablus, and Qalqilya. The regime in Tel Aviv has intensified its attacks across occupied territories since launching its war on Gaza in early October. Since then, 491 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank alone. The Yemeni army says it's carried out new operations against British and American targets in retaliation for their aggression against the country. Army spokesperson said Yemen's naval forces struck a British oil tanker in the Red Sea with missiles. Yahya Sadi also said military also shot down an American MQ-9 drone over Sa'ada province. Sadi added new operations are also a show of solidarity with Palestinians amid Israel's campaign of genocide. He stressed Yemen's armed forces will continue these operations in the Red and Arabian Seas as well as the Indian Ocean until the Western-backed genocide comes to a halt. Thousands of Yemenis once again pour out to the streets of the capital Sana'a and several other cities to reaffirm their full support for Palestinians in Gaza. They also lauded their army's operations against Israeli-linked vessels. Abdulatif Al-Washali has your details from Sana'a.
Amid rising tensions in the international waterways and the departure of several Western warships from the Red Sea, thousands of Yemenis filled the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities across the country in yet another strong show of support for Palestine.
We took to the streets to protest for the women and children who are being killed by American and British weapons. Our naval forces will firmly continue operations as long as the aggression against the people of Gaza continues. And if the Yemenis are given the opportunity, there will be thousands of them rushing to fight for Palestine.
The Yemeni people are supporting and standing with our brothers in Gaza, and no sanction or action by United States and the United Kingdom will stop the Yemeni people. Yemeni people in Sana'a and other city continue and demonstrate weekly.
Protesters endorsed the Yemeni army's recent naval operations against Israeli-bound ships. They urged their armed forces to continue attacking the Israeli regime and its Western benefactors.
We support our naval and aerial forces operations, and we urge the army to continue destroying the enemies and do not allow any American, British, or Israeli ship to pass through our waters. Our army has targeted more than 100 ships, and the number will double unless the killing of the people of Gaza stops. We are ready to go and fight for the Palestinians in Gaza, and we promise that we can make Israel disappear.
In the latest development, the Yemeni army spokesman announced the targeting of the Israeli ship MSC Darwin in the Gulf of Aden with multiple drones and naval missiles. The Yemeni armed forces have also launched several ballistic missiles toward the Israeli-occupied city of Eilat.
Every week, Yemenis hold fresh rallies across the country to express their solidarity with Palestinians amid the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza. People here vow that they will continue their support for Palestinians until the full liberation of the occupied territories. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Palestinian Civil Defense said recently it has found hundreds of bodies of Palestinians buried in mass graves by Israeli regime forces in the courtyard of Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza Strip. The bodies of children, elderly women and young men were among those found. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, video journalist Mohtasem Mortaja describes the scene at Nasser Hospital, where hundreds of bodies have been discovered since Israeli troops pulled out. Mohtasem Mortaja is a Palestinian video journalist in Khan Yunis, southern Gaza. Over recent days, he has been documenting mass graves uncovered in Nasser Hospital, where more than 300 bodies have been discovered since Israeli regime forces withdrew. Recently, his video of a woman in grey holding the recently uncovered body of her son spread across social media. Here, he describes the scene. He wrote, hundreds of mothers have come here to the Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. They're looking for their children, moving from body to body, inspecting each one with the greatest detail. They pass their eyes and their hands over the corpses, seeing if they are wearing a shirt, a pair of trousers, perhaps some shoes that will identify their child among the 300 people found in these mass graves. The mothers just need a simple, essential detail to recognize their sons. That was how the woman in grey found hers. The rest of his features had dissolved and disappeared. The Zionist regime laid siege to Khan Yunis for 3 months. Nasser Hospital, the second largest in Gaza and the backbone of medical services in the south, became a haven for 10,000 Palestinians sheltering from attacks. But Israeli regime forces repeatedly raided the hospital in January and February, completely shutting it down, arresting staff and sending thousands of homeless Palestinians fleeing. Now, after troops pulled out earlier this month, experts have discovered the Israelis buried hundreds of people around the hospital's perimeter. The first day the graves were discovered, 70 bodies were uncovered. The next day, it was 70 more. The Palestinians were buried underground, left beneath trees, and abandoned in the hospital's wards. Recently, rescue workers found a few dozen more, bringing the total up to 310. The air is heavy with the smell of death. It's inescapable in every corner, and worse with everybody taken out of the ground. Every time they dig, they find more corpses, sometimes in places they never expect. Sometimes they only find parts of a person or a corpse decomposed beyond recognition. According to the Gaza government media office, some bodies were found decapitated or had their skin and organs removed. Children, elderly women, and young men are said to be among the dead. Rescue workers say they found bodies with their hands tied behind their backs, which the UN Human Rights Office said indicates serious violations of international human rights law and international humanitarian law. The Zionist regime denies it buried the Palestinian bodies, claiming instead that it had respectfully exhumed the dead searching for Israeli captives. There are so many tears at Nasser Hospital today and so much pain. It's hard to find the words to describe this scene. The feeling of seeing someone find their relative is indescribable. The way mothers cover their dead sons in a shroud and accompany them to the cemeteries. Every sight journalists capture, they do so silently. They can't speak. They cry blood as they film. Their hands are shaking so much their cameras lose focus. But they start over and try again. The Palestinian Civil Defense said recently it has found hundreds of bodies of Palestinians buried in mass graves by Israeli regime forces in the courtyard of Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis in the southern Gaza Strip. At least 200 bodies had been retrieved from two mass graves in the medical compound recently. As the search continued, rescuers estimated there to be at least 400 bodies. The Gaza government media office said some of the bodies found had been decapitated and had their skins and organs removed. According to Al Jazeera, the bodies of children, elderly women and young men were among those found. Rescue teams said some bodies had their hands bound behind their backs, suggesting they were executed and buried on the spot. Middle East Eye could not independently verify the reported conditions of the bodies. As the news of the mass graves spread, many people arrived at the hospital in the hope of finding members of their family who had gone missing. The mass graves were discovered weeks after Israeli regime troops ended a three-month invasion of Khan Yunis, during which ground forces repeatedly attacked Nasser Hospital. The hospital, Gaza's second largest and the backbone of the health system in southern Gaza, was put out of service after deadly Israeli raids in February, when 10,000 people had been sheltering at the medical complex. The army stormed the hospital twice, following a weeks-long siege in January, during which 200 people were detained, according to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, and hundreds of patients and displaced people sheltering in the building were forcibly removed. Medical staff reported being stripped naked, beaten, and humiliated by Israeli regime forces, with many staff and patients targeted by sniper fire. In March, the British media released verified footage showing detained and kneeling people inside the complex. Following the raid, it also verified footage documenting 21 instances of fire targeting staff and patients during the siege. Health officials said there was no power and not enough staff in the hospital to treat around 200 patients who remained there after the siege. According to Palestinian Health Ministry spokesperson Ashraf Al-Ghudra, the hospital's generators failed, cutting the water supply, while sewage flooded emergency rooms, making it impossible for the remaining staff to treat intensive care unit patients. He added that a lack of oxygen supplies, also a result of no power, caused the deaths of at least 7 patients. The Zionist regime of Israel said the hospital was housing Hamas resistance fighters, a claim it has regularly made when attacking hospitals in Gaza, despite not having produced any credible evidence of a military presence inside them. This is not the first mass grave that has been unearthed at a medical facility in the Gaza Strip. The discovery follows another earlier this month at Ashrafa Medical Complex in Gaza City, formerly Gaza's largest hospital, which was left in ruins after a two-week assault by Israeli regime forces in late March. Several bodies were found in the hospital's courtyard, including at least one person wearing underwear who appeared to have been executed recently, according to an Al Jazeera Arabic reporter at the scene. After Israeli regime forces withdrew from the hospital on April 1st, having destroyed most of the medical complex, teams from several government ministries were deployed to Ashrafa to remove and identify the bodies. The searches were initiated after survivors said they witnessed a summary execution of Palestinians by Israeli regime forces during the raid. The Zionist regime military officials said its forces had killed 200 people and abducted 900 during the 15-day assault on the hospital. Gaza's civil defense said around 300 people had been murdered. The army said it conducted its raid without harming civilians and medical personnel. Medical organizations and eyewitnesses strongly rejected that claim. Ahmad Al-Maghdama, a Palestinian plastic surgeon, and his mother, Yusra Al-Maghdama, a general practitioner, were among those killed.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Calls are growing from around the world for an independent and transparent investigation into mass graves recently found in the Gaza Strip. Nearly 400 bodies have so far been recovered from mass graves at two hospitals which were raided by Israeli forces in Gaza. Palestinian officials say there's evidence of field executions and even people being buried alive. Is there any war crime that the Israeli regime has not committed in over 200 days of its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip? And what red lines remain for Tel Aviv to cross so that Western countries led by the United States move to stop this occupying regime? Joining us on tonight's Spotlight, we have author, journalist, and producer Sakina Daoutou, joining us from the British capital, London. And also we have political analyst Mr. Shabir Rizvi, who's also joining us from the British capital.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
welcome to the program both of our guests. Let's start off with Ms. Datu in London. It's 203 days of relentless death and destruction. Is it clear now that the Israeli onslaught and massacre is not just against the resistance, but against all of the people in Gaza?
I think there never was doubt at any stage that this was not just against the resistance, but that it was against the people of Palestine. From day one, when we have watched deaths of not just men and women, but children. I mean, we have not seen in history how many children being killed in one go like this indiscriminately. So I think it has been very, very clear from day one. The kind of warfare that has happened, the kind of atrocities we have witnessed, you know, the blanket bombing of people anywhere, the targeting in particular of children, these were all very clear signs, I think, from right from the start, that this was not looking for Hamas, this was not looking for any kind of resistance. This was a war on the Palestinian people, and I think that has continued to become more and more open, such that even those people who probably at one point doubted or were rather confused by the Western media, who has a lot of propaganda going around, and maybe were believing that they were actually out there looking for terrorists, in their words, you know, as freedom fighters. But it is now clear to anyone. I think there isn't probably a soul around the world watching the genocide going on who now believes that what Israel is doing is actually targeting all Palestinians.
Mr. Razvi, as Israel pushes ahead with its genocidal war in Gaza, Hamas has called for an international probe into the mass graves that were found under two of the hospitals that were raided by Israeli occupation forces. The Palestinian defense officials have reported evidence of field executions and that a number of the bodies had their hands tied, while some others still had medical tubes attached to them, indicating that they may have been buried alive. 400 bodies have been recovered, some of them even children. There's no way to get around this gut-wrenching and horrifying war crime that the Israelis have committed.
Hello, assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much for your invitation. Look, as I always open these programs with our condolences to over 35,000 martyrs in Palestine and many more in the West Bank, plus also our real supplications for the families whose injured and maimed individuals. So really, we have all the sympathy and support for them. Look, at the end of the day, your word heart-wrenching is really perhaps not sufficient to describe the remorse, the anger that people are sort of expressing. It's palpable on the streets of London, Washington, Los Angeles, all over the planet. That people are clearly seeing that this particular entity, the Zionist entity, the brutal, barbaric entity, has really gone over all sort of accepted moral parameters that one would have had. At the end of the day, Israel is able to commit this genocide because it is being very clearly supported by Washington and the European Union, except for a few European nations who are really making noises against the Zionist regime. But the facts on the ground are that, as Bernie Saunders today or yesterday, in response to Netanyahu's interference in American politics, when Netanyahu put forward a video clip saying that American authorities should take strong steps against the protesters in USA. And Bernie Saunders replied, said it is not anti-Semitic to hold Israel to account. And he also further said that the arms being supplied to the Zionist regime is against the American law and its constitution. So we have to really wait and see how many more voices from the political establishment will start jumping ship. when they see that the ship is sinking, and also the pressure that's being mounted by the young people in the USA. What I call this is probably the Vietnam moment, as it happened in the 60s when America was engaged in a brutal war in Vietnam. And it was really the students who came out on the streets and at campuses which allowed the Washington and its allies to change their mind. And particularly the U.S. administration had to sue for peace in Paris at that time. And I think hopefully we would move in that direction quite rapidly. But insofar as investigation, your question sort of alluded to was that I don't think there will be any credible investigation which will allow independent investigators to really ascertain that this was a crime that was committed heinously by the Zionist regime. This is one which has come out open, but very clearly, as you all know, there have been many crimes that have been committed in the last nearly 7 months.
Ms. Datu, do you agree with Mr. Rezvi? Do you see this issue of an independent probe transpiring? Will it happen? Will the Israelis allow independent experts to access the site of the mass graves? And will the findings ultimately lead to any consequences for the Israelis?
There is not a chance in the world that Israel will allow any kind of investigation. I mean, this entity, this Zionist entity that is refusing to allow aid, life-saving medicines for Palestinians, there is no chance that they have any kind of intention to allow anyone to probe anything at all. The double standards of the world are very clear here. Here in the UK Parliament, this question was asked that when there was something similar found in Ukraine, the Parliament discussed this. And, you know, why was there no mention of the mass graves in Israel that have been found in Palestine? And, you know, the question was fobbed off completely. So the double standards of the, you know, those who are complicit in the genocide are very clear. At the same time, I think we have to remember that we have seen in the past 6 months complete failure of international bodies being able to take any kind of decision that has any teeth at all. So the United Nations, we saw ICJ, yes, there were bits and pieces here and there, but they have not been able to really come up with any solution which tells us that, you know, these bodies are defunct in reality. And going forward, the only way things are going to change is when now people, like the way we see students, you know, protesting in the US, we have to see this kind of movement globally. We have to see this kind of people movement in the Arab world to start with. And so even though we know their governments are also complicit, because silence is being complicit in a genocide, however, people have got to rise now. They've got to gather the courage to say enough is enough. Nobody is there to speak for us. Nobody is there to, there is nobody internationally that we can count on. So I think I don't have much trust in any of the international bodies or any of the Western countries conducting any kind of a probe that would bring out the reality.
Okay, Ms. Dutton, I'm going to stay with you for the next question. Students and faculty members at universities across the USA continue to hold rallies in solidarity with Palestinians. This is something, of course, unprecedented with regards to Palestinian support inside the U.S., from California to Texas to Massachusetts, and also similar demonstrations are spreading in other countries as well, even Jewish communities. They've also been participating in the rallies to support the Palestinian cause and to end this genocidal massacre. Talk to us about that and about the police clampdown on campuses, which is being seen as an attack on freedom of expression.
In terms of, you know, being unprecedented, yes. In relation to Palestine, this is unprecedented. But also, I think we need to remember that any kind of revolution or a major change around the world has started with students. This is the body, once the protests take over, you know, people at university levels, this is when you know that the society is really changing. Young people have got the vigor, the passion to make a change. They are the next generation. Therefore, if their views are changing, then that's a big thing. I think the brutality that we see of the police is nothing surprising. We have to understand that this now, at the moment, has become in most countries a fight between the ruling class and their own people. So whether we are talking of the Western countries, we are talking of Middle Eastern countries, there is a group of those who rule upon us, and it is in their interest, of course, for monetary reasons, for power. They want to keep the status quo as it is. However, the people have been watching all this massacre. I mean, heart-wrenching, you mentioned earlier. I don't think there is any genuine human being who doesn't feel continuous pain watching what is going on. We've been witnessing now, in Rafah, the bombing that has been taking place at the moment. So there is a divide, I think. And because it is a divide, things are going to get a lot more nastier, in my view, before they get better. Because when somebody is losing control, they will be like a wounded animal. They will be hitting left, right, and center. And now we can see that these police and the ruling classes are causing violence upon their own people, because they cannot accept that people have woken up and are seeing the truth. I think that in the shorter term, we will see a lot more violence, a lot more difficult times. But this is really the beginning of the end of Zionism globally.
Mr. Razvi, you alluded to the demonstrations earlier. The students in America, they want universities to divest finances from manufacturers that sell weapons to Israel. They also want Washington to end its military and financial support for the Zionist regime. Those demands have been met with violent crackdowns by U.S. police, and the protesters have been called everything from anti-Semites to terrorists. Again, more double standards when it comes to criticizing Israel.
Well, it's not just double standards. I think it's the moral compass which has been completely lost on the American and European ruling elite, that they really have no fiber of morality left in them. And that's the reason why they're acting the way they are, supporting, doing everything in their power to really rescue the Zionist entity. So what they are doing is, as the sister very clearly pointed out, that things will probably get worse before they get better. And again, I want to put in some historical context. Back in the 60s, when there were demonstrations going on against the war in Vietnam, there was a shooting of students at Kent State University in the USA when the students were demonstrating. So far, we haven't had any deaths of students by troops and security forces in the USA. But the potential is there. It has happened over 60 years ago in the USA itself. So they may bring out firepower and shoot down a few students. One doesn't know how the completely immoral regimes in Washington, London, and Paris are really thinking, that they really want to silence any opposition to their support, their unmitigated, undiluted support for the Zionist regime. And people have indeed awakened, not only awakened, but they're actually trying to hold their rulers and their elites to account. And that's where I think the elite are getting frightened, and they will sort of continue to do whatever they can to really suppress the demonstrations, and at the same time continue to give financial and military support to the Zionist entity. As you know, only a few days ago, $95 billion dollars were written to support Israel, Ukraine, and other entities to fight against what they call terrorists or state. So what we are seeing is that the ordinary people in America's taxpayers' money is being given to the Zionist entity. And whilst we know very well the education system in USA is creaking, the healthcare does not exist for a prosperous nation like USA. People are sleeping in the streets from New York to Seattle to Los Angeles, all over the place. And, you know, 50 million people in the USA have no health care, while the U.S. taxpayer monies goes to Tel Aviv, and there the settlers
Absolutely.
Get free houses, free health care, free education, and money to live comfortably. So people are realizing that their tax dollars are being wasted on a Zionist entity. So that's another angle that people are really looking at, not just sort of divestment and sort of stopping armament trade, armament support for the Zionist entity.
Ms. Sekine Datu, I want to bring the same issue to you as well. The rallies, they gain more steam to protest the recent approval of more military aid for the Israeli regime. About that aid package, billions of taxpayer dollars will continue to go to Israel to continue its genocide. What was your reaction to the approval of that bill?
I think, you know, in addition to what Brother Shabir was just saying, 40 million people, this is 12% of the population of the U.S., is on food stamps. This is the basic need of food, you know, and then we've seen 14.1 billion, you know, committed to Israel and only to go for military equipment. It just beggars belief, to be honest. I think if I was an American, I would not be able to understand this. And this is exactly what is happening with people awakening. I mean, how does it make any sense to anyone that you are subjugating your own people? Who, and by the way, it isn't just in the US. This is happening in the UK too. I mean, being the seventh largest economy here in the UK, the economic situation of the people isn't great. We see homelessness. We see, you know, food banks rising every day. And yet our leaders every time are spending money and sending them, you know, to Israel. So I think people really are finding this very, very uncomfortable. I mean, I have had people come up to me. So, you know, when I travel on the underground, for example, I wear my Palestinian badge everywhere. And I have had literally people stop me, people who I would not expect to be at all pro-Palestinian, and tell me, thank you. Thank you for wearing this. And we are feeling the pain. Sometimes we are not able to express it. These are people who will say to me, we are Sikh, we are Christians, we don't believe in any religion, you know, Jewish, but we are really hurting. So I think this is one aspect, but the other aspect is people are really angry. They're very angry, and coming elections in both countries, in the US and UK, I think will reveal very clearly how unhappy people are that their hard-earned tax money is so easily being sent to Israel, and that too, to kill children. I don't think anyone now can stand this.
Mr. Rivkin, let's backtrack a few weeks now. How do you view the massive global support that Iran received for carrying out Operation True Promise against the Israelis on April the 13th? The support that Iran received for shattering Israel's myth of invincibility. Now, minus the U.S. and other accomplices of the Israelis, almost all regional countries, they expressed support for what Iran carried out.
Firstly, the Israel's military invincibility was obviously shattered on 7th of October when Hamas mounted a terrific military operation. Not myself, but other military experts have very clearly sort of expressed and articulated that may be taught at military schools how to defend your land. But of course, what Iran did is an extraordinary event in the historical context. What has happened is that for the last, you know, since the advent of the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979, Iran has obviously experience all kinds of problems that has been inflicted on the nation. They've had sort of multiple sanctions from them, 8-year war, you know, scientists have been assassinated, and of course the ultimate was really the assassination and murder of its officials at an embassy in a third country, a sovereign entity, a sovereign land was invaded in a sovereign country. So that really left no option for Iran to do what they did to respond. But they gave ample warning, nearly 2 weeks of it. And what did show that Iran is not going to keep quiet. And as the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Rahbar has quite clearly said that the days of hit and run are over. And I think the U.S., and its allies who supported Israel when Iran had defended itself by launching a missile and drone attack on Israel shows clearly that Israel is not able to defend itself on its own. It needs USA, France, and UK to do so, plus also Jordan participating in that particular enterprise. So what it shows clearly is that in future, what will happen is that Iran has clearly shown the world that it will not only defend itself, but also, you may recall, at that particular night for 24 hours, there were no bombing that took place in Gaza. There was a respite for a few hours for the people of Gaza when these drones were being stopped in halfway reaching Israel. So the resistance movement, the people, the oppressed people of the world, and anyone who is standing for their own right now feel rather proud, happy, and as I've said somewhere else, that the oracle of the oppressed, which is what the Islamic Republic of Iran has spoken.
And a final thought from Ms. Datu. Israel has been a menace to all countries around it, like Lebanon and Syria, where Israel constantly violates their sovereignty and carries out illegal strikes on a regular basis. As Mr. Rezvi alluded to earlier, Iran has said the era of Israeli hit and run is over. Has Iran now set a precedent where Israeli attacks and destabilizing actions will be dealt with appropriately?
Iran has definitely set a precedence. And, you know, when we look at the history of Iran, there's been so much propaganda against the Islamic Republic for so long. And I think for me and for a lot of Muslims out there, the way we see it is the religious values and morals that, you know, within the Iranian thinking that has brought it to this stage. And we have examples, I think, which Iran follows. And for me, what I see here is I see the example, for example, of the son-in-law and the cousin of the Holy Prophet, Ali ibn Abu Talib, that when he finally would go into the battlefield and raise his Zulfiqar, the enemy would struggle and would be shivering. These are the principles. Ali is the principle on which Iran is running. And therefore, they have now come down into the battlefield and the enemies are shaking.
Okay.
But inshallah, we will see the victory.
All right. Thanks a lot. That's all the time we have for tonight's show. Thanks to author, journalist, and producer Sakina Datu joining us from London. Also joining us from the British capital, political analyst Mr. Shebi Rezvi. And a special thanks to you all for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program, and the special guest speaker for today's discussion is Shaykh Rouhani. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right, Sheikh Rouhani. Considering Islamic rulings and Islamic obligations, you know, there are some rights that must be observed in regard to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, like Saum and Salat or something like that, and also some rights that must be observed in regard to the people around, mainly known as Haqqullah, the first category, and the second one as Haqqun Nas. Now, some people might say that the Haqqun Nas is more important than Haqqullah. Is it true or not? And if Haqqullah is by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, since Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is Rahman and Rahim, can we not do that, the obligations, and then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala forgive us or not?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Regarding the first part of your question, yes, Haqqun Nas is more important. We must be very much cautious and careful about observing the rights of the people because it belongs to the people either to forgive us or not. That is why you should always ask forgiveness from the people, and we should always try not to violate the rights of the Nas and people. This is what we can say absolutely true, that Haqqun Nas is important. But when it comes to ma'asi, or to the sins that the people commit, you know, in this question, when you say that why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala takes us to Jahannam, this conception or this perception is wrong.
Yes.
Why? Because you see that paradise or Jannah and hellfire or hell is something that we built by our own deeds.
Yes.
You know, we prepare our Jahannam, we prepare our Jannah, not Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Okay.
Because whatever we do in our life, it has either rewards or punishment. It is like pieces of bricks that we put together to make a wall. Every piece of this brick is our deed. Then that is why we are ourselves responsible for our Jannah and Jahannam. We ourselves take ourselves to either Jannah or Jahannam. That is why Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is merciful, is kind. He sent us 124,000 prophets and many scholars, imams, a'immas, and guides to inform us of the wrong things and
yes,
the wrong and the right things. And it reminds me of a very beautiful hadith from Imam al-Hadi alayhi salatu wasalam. Once the people of Ahwaz sent a letter to Imam al-Hadi,
yes,
and asked him many questions. In response to those questions, in one of those letters, Imam al-Hadi mentioned a very beautiful point, saying that when a mawla, a master, provides his servant for some properties. For example, all the properties belong to Mawla, to the master. Then
yes,
the master decides to give these, some part of these properties to the servant. And he provides the servant with these properties, but saying that, okay, for this limited time, you will be the owner of these properties of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the right what to do or not to do this with these properties. After this time, I will get it back to my own self. And of course, if you observe these certain things during this time, I will provide you with more properties, with more, let's say, rewards. If not, of course, I will punish you.
Okay.
Within this time, during this time that the properties are in the control of the servant, always this servant reminds him of the rulings, that this should be observed, that should be observed, but not force him, but not pressurize him. Then after this time, when this limited time finished, then now if the master rewards him or punish him again, it is because of what is because of this, that during this limited time,
yes,
the servant did those things that either he deserves punishment or rewards. It should not be blamed on the master.
Mm-hmm.
Because master provided him with facilities, with
yes,
properties. It was out of rahmah and mercy of the master. If this person do not observe all those, let's say, rulings, despite the fact that the master always was reminding him,